Doesn't God's punishment in this parsha seem a little bit drastic? What did the Jews do? They wanted some meat. They asked for some steak, for a hot dog, for a hamburger. And they're punished with death. What exactly is going on? How can we explain the sequence of events, the cause and the effect, that the parsha seems to be describing? God's conduct in this whole affair seems very, very perplexing. There's a key to the parsha which is offered to us by Chazal. Chazal often offer us the keys to mysterious parshiot in the Torah. And the key is as follows. They tell us that what the Jews were crying about, when they were crying and they were saying, "Give us meat, we wish we had fish, we wish we had onions," they weren't really crying about the meat and the fish and the onions, but what they were really crying about was that they didn't want the mitzvos, or at least they didn't want the mitzvos that forbade them from enjoying the pleasures, or what they perceived to be the pleasures of life. This is the key that Chazal give us, that the Jews crying was not simply that they were missing a certain comfort that they felt was important to them, but rather the tears were tears of rejection of the whole value system which God had attempted to teach them and to sell to them, to convince them of in the giving of the Torah and in the redemption from Egypt. Now, whenever Chazal says something like this, they see it in the parsha. There are clues in the parsha, and this is no exception. So a number of commentaries are all troubled. Where in the parsha do Chazal see that the tears of the Jews were for anything but the steak that they were missing, or the fish, or the onions? Where is it in the parsha? There are some answers which are offered, and I would like to add perhaps an extra measure of insight to those answers. Let's take a look for a second at the psukim. We'll read them one by one, and we'll note some very interesting anomalies in the psukim. And what's going to organize for us our reading of the psukim is the fact that the Jews' complaint, their tears, their mournful, sobbing complaint, is repeated by the Torah not once, not twice, not even three times. It's repeated four times. And each time that the sobbing complaint is repeated, it changes. It undergoes a metamorphosis. And I think that the progression of metamorphoses that these complaints go through, in the telling and the retelling, offers us some insight into what was really going on in the minds of the Jews. How did they understand it, consciously and subconsciously? How did Moshe perceive it? And how did God ultimately perceive it, who sees to the depths of the human heart? So let's take a look at some of the psukim. The Torah begins by telling us, "V'hasafsuf asher b'kirbo hisavu ta'ava," that those people, mixed group, Gerim, converts who had joined the Jews in Egypt, they had a desire. Vayeshuvu vayivku gam b'nei Yisrael. The Jews sort of caught that. It was a contagious desire. The Jews got this desire also. Vayomru, and the Jews said, "Mi achilinu basar?" Who will feed us meat? A very interesting way of asking. They don't ask, "Please give us meat." They don't even say, "Give us meat." They ask, "Who will give us meat?" it's an important point to note, because in one of the later retellings, that formulation will be dropped. It will not be who will give us meat, it will turn into something else. What exactly is meant by phrasing a request for meat as a question, who will give us meat? Really are saying, please give us meat. Let's go on. Zacharnu es hadaga asher nochal b'mitzrayim chinam. Remember that fish that we had in Egypt. It was free. Es hakishuim ve'es ha'avatichim, the zucchinis, the watermelons, ve'es ha'chatzir, some sort of a herb, ve'es ha'bitzalim, the onions, ooh, those delicious onions, ve'es ha'shumim, and the garlic, ve'ata, but now, nafshenu yivesha, we're dry, dry, parched, ein kol, there's nothing, or there isn't everything. Bilti el haman einenu, all that we have to look forward to is the man. This is the first time that the complaint is told. It's told in the words of Jews themselves. Mi achilenu basar, who's going to give us meat? Zacharnu et hadaga, remember that fish and those delicious onions and garlic in Egypt. So before we even go onwards, we need to ponder for a second some anomalies in these pesukim themselves. What's happening? Give us meat, remember that delicious fish? Give us meat, though the fish was so delicious. If you're remembering the delicious fish, then ask for fish. Why ask for meat? You're remembering the delicious garlic? Ask for garlic. Why ask for meat? What's happening here? Not only that, when was the last time that you tasted a delicious onion? I understand onion and garlic potato chips is a delicacy. Onion rings, maybe if it's seasoned. Remember that delicious onion, the delicious garlic. We don't have garlic rings. What type of memories are these? The delicious onions, the delicious garlic, are these true memories? Are these false memories? We know that memory plays tricks on us. That's a well-documented psychological fact. What type of memories are these? Oy, we wish we had some delicious onions. Okay, let's keep these anomalies in mind. Number one, who is going to give us meat? Number two, we want meat because we remember the fish. How does remembering the fish make us want meat? And number three, what type of good memories do you have about eating onions, eating garlic? Have tastes changed so much in the past 4,000 years that what nowadays take a bite of onion? Ich! Back then, onion, what a delicacy. Has it really changed so much? Why are they remembering the onions with so much fondness and the garlic? So let's move on. After this, the Torah goes on and gives us a description. The man, which the Jews said, all we've got is that man and it makes us so parched. The Torah tells us that the man wasn't really that way. The man was really much better. V'haman kizra gadhu, v'eino ke'in habidolach. It looked very appealing. It was like a precious stone, like a diamond. And people could make it taste like things, like all different types of foods. The Torah goes on to describe it. Man was a good thing. The Jews perhaps didn't appreciate it. They weren't looking at the man the right way. The Torah's juxtaposition of the Jews' complaint with the actual reality of the man might lend further credence to the theory of Chazal that it wasn't so much the absence of tasty food that the Jews were complaining about. After all, they had the man, right? But rather that they were transferring their anxiety, their distress over something else to a purely fictitious complaint about their food wasn't real. All we've got is that man. The man is awesome. If something's bothering you, it's got to be something else. It's got to be something else. So Moshe hears the people complaining. They were gathering together, family chat, complaining on family chat. Bochel mishpechotav ish lepesach ahalo. Vayichar af Hashem me'od, and God got very angry. Uve'inei Moshe ra, and it was also bad in God's eye, in Moshe's eyes. So, are God and Moshe looking at things the same way? Or is there a disconnect between the two of them? Did Moshe understand the Jews' complaint in a more superficial way? So it was bad in his eyes? And perhaps God understood the Jews' complaint in a deeper way? That wasn't just bad, but that made him angry. Vayichar af Hashem me'od. Or are these two just synonyms that God got angry and Moshe thought it wasn't so good, and it's all really the same? Maybe Moshe got angry too. Maybe God didn't get that angry, just thought it wasn't so good. What's the proper reading of the Pesukim? Did Moshe and God perceive these at the same wavelength, or did they perceive it in two different ways? Okay, let's go on. So how did Moshe respond to this? Vayomer Moshe el Hashem. Moshe begins to complain to God. Lama hari ota l'avdecha. Why have you done such a bad thing to me? V'lama lo matzati chin beinecha. Why have I not found favor in your eyes? L'sumet masa kala amaze ala. You placed the burden of this nation upon me. Have I given birth to them? Am I their mother? Am I their father? You're telling me to hold them on my shoulder like a nursemaid holds a little baby till I get to Israel. Me'ayin li basar, says Moshe. Where am I going to get the meat from? L'seis l'chala amazet, to give to this whole nation. Ki yivku alai l'imor, because they cry to me saying, Tina lanu basar v'nochela, give us meat and we'll eat. So here you can already notice for a second. In the previous pasuk, the one that introduces the Jews' complaints, it says, Vayeshuvu vayivku, they cried. Vayomru, and they said, Amira, they said. They cried and they said. And here Moshe is repeating the same words. Ki yivku alai lemor. They're crying and saying. We're ready now for the first retelling, the first restatement of the Jews' complaint. And here we're struck by the difference, not just that this is shorter and that's longer, but there are some features that are totally absent from Moshe's repetition of the Jews' complaint. For instance, the Jews' complaint, remember, was a phrase as a statement, as a request, or as a question. Mi achilenu basar, who's going to give us meat? And here, what does it say? Tina lanu basar v'nochela, give us meat and we'll eat. Moshe apparently understood the request as just that, a request. Give us meat. And not just that. What is present in this retelling that was absent from the previous one? Mi achilenu basar, who will feed us meat? Tinalanu basar v'nochela, give us meat and we'll eat. In Moshe's repetition, the request for meat is highlighted independently. And then the purpose of the request, so that we can eat, is also given equal press time. It's not integrated into the request. It's not ha'achilenu basar, feed us meat. It's give us meat so that we can eat. Again, Moshe is understanding here that the Jews' request was innocuous. We're hungry, we can't serve God as well as we might otherwise. If we had meat, we'd be able to study better, we'd be able to pray better, we'd be able to do more chesed, we'd be able to travel more swiftly to Eretz Yisrael. Give us meat so that we can eat. It's nothing more than that. There are actually some commentaries who explain that Moshe over here is trying to defend the Jews to God. He understood that something about what they asked or how they asked it has bothered God tremendously. Vayichar af Hashem me'od. Hashem got very angry. And so he was trying to downplay the gravity, the severity, right, of the Jews' disrespect. But even if we don't say that, even if we say, perhaps Moshe understood the Jews differently than God, and he is now repeating to God what he understood the Jews to have said. All they're asking for, it's an innocuous and innocent request. They think that they can work better if they had a better diet. So that's Moshe's repetition. Let's move on. How does God respond? So God says, Ve'el ha'am tomar, I'm skipping a few pesukim. Say to the nation, Hiskachule machar v'achaltem basar, prepare yourself for tomorrow. You'll eat some meat. Ki b'chitem be'aznei Hashem limor, because, and note here again those key words, b'chitem, you cried. Be'aznei Hashem limor, saying. The Torah is prepping us for the third retelling of the Jews' complaint. So how does the Torah retell this? Ki b'chitem be'aznei Hashem limor, Miyachilinu basar. So God, first of all, reminds Moshe softly, this was not an innocuous request for meat. This was, who's going to feed us meat? And following that, ki tov lanu b'mitzrayim, because Egypt was better for us. It was better for us in Egypt. Ki tov lanu b'mitzrayim. Now, did the Jews actually say tov lanu b'mitzrayim? No, they didn't say that. They just said, remember the fish and the onions and the garlic in Egypt? God understood that it wasn't just a fond memory of the bygone days, but actually that the purpose of the Jews was to contrast what took place in Egypt, the cuisine of Egypt, with the cuisine of the desert. And it wasn't just an intellectual exercise, but there was the establishment of a hierarchy. There was more pleasure in Egypt. There was more pleasure. We had the fish and the onions and the garlic. Tov lanu b'mitzrayim, it was better for us. Because if we're assessing our life's priorities and our life's values, and it's on a hedonistic level, it's on a level of where is there the most pleasure, so Egypt is better than the desert. There was more pleasure in Egypt than there was in the desert, so Egypt was better than the desert. That's the scale that's being used for measuring things. Tov lanu b'mitzrayim, zacharnu et hadagar, remember the fish? Fish tasted so much better in Egypt. Nothing like Egyptian fish. Nothing like Egyptian garlic. It was better. Better. Egypt was better. Whatever scale we're using to measure things, Egypt was better. I don't know if it's such a refined scale. If Egypt is better than Mount Sinai, what type of scale has Egypt better than Mount Sinai? Tov lanu b'mitzrayim. And maybe that's connected somehow to this miyachilenu basar, who's going to feed us meat? Indeed, who's going to feed them meat? Is God going to feed us meat? Paro would feed us meat, for sure. He gave us fish. We didn't even have to pay for it. He gave us watermelon. We didn't have to pay for it. He gave us onion and garlic. We didn't have to pay for it. Paro would feed us these things. Why doesn't God feed us this also? After all, the leader's job is to fill his followers' tummies. Who's going to feed us meat? Paro in Egypt, we know who fed us meat. Who's going to feed us meat here in the desert? That's what's important. Let's move onwards. Let's see the fourth retelling. Again, it's going to be introduced by what words? Crying and saying. V'nasan Hashem lachem basar v'achatem. God will give you meat and you'll eat. Lo yom echad tochlun v'lo yom mayim. You won't eat for 1 day or for 2 days. Not even for 10 days. Ar chodesh yamim. Ad asher yitzei me'apchem. Until it comes out of your nose. V'haya lachem lizara. And it's like a sword in the gut. Ya'an. Because. Ki me'astem es Hashem asher b'kir b'chem. You've been fed up with God. You're disgusted by God, who's in your midst. That tivku lifanav lemor, and you cried in front of him, saying, "Lama ze yatzanu mimitzrayim? For what have we left Egypt? Why have we left Egypt? We thought we were leaving Egypt because in Egypt we only had the pint-sized burger." And in the desert in Israel, we'd get the jumbo burger. Jumbo! Fish and chips deluxe. In Egypt, we didn't have the deluxe, but at least we had it. Here in the desert, we don't have the fish and chips at all. So why? What's the point? What was the point of leaving Egypt if we're not going to get the jumbo burger or the deluxe fish and chips? Lama ze yitzana mimitzrayim. Indeed. Fed up with God, me'astem es Hashem asher b'kir b'chem. You've become disgusted with God. God is not tasteful to you anymore. Following God, you don't find it to be a tasteful thing anymore. Lama ze yatzana mimitzrayim? Why did we leave Egypt? There's no jumbo burgers here. There's no deluxe fish and chips in the desert. So let's work backwards for a second. Let's go through all these different things and see what's the implication. Clearly, the last one is the most explicit. Me'astem es Hashem. Fed up with God. Lama ze yitzanu mimitzrayim? We don't understand why we left Egypt. We thought we were just going to get more hedonism, more gashmiut, more materialism, more pleasure. And we didn't, so we don't understand why we left. Going one earlier, Miachilenu Basar. In Egypt, we know who's going to give us pleasure. Paro was a good boss. He gave us fish and chips. He gave us onions and garlic. But here in the desert, Tov lanu b'Mitzrayim. Egypt was better. Egypt was better. Shed some light on the original Moshe. Whether it was an innocent mistake, whether he was trying to present it to God in a different light, one way or another, he understood it as being simply a small thing that they were missing. They'd appreciate a little bit more meat so that they can eat. That's all. No greater, broader subconscious implications. For the Jews, it's not as clear as it was in God's retelling, but it's not either as clear as it was in Moshe's retelling. There's an ambiguity there. Were they consciously aware of what was motivating their complaint? Maybe yes. Maybe some of them. Others, perhaps it was only subconscious. Some of them may have just bowed to peer pressure. But there was a general confusion. And sometimes more than confusion. Sometimes there was a genuine distortion of proper values that was taking place here. And it's these constant retellings where God corrects Moshe very gently, that help these ideas emerge, that this is not about meat and appetite, but this is actually a question of what type of scale are you using to assess the good place, Eretz Tova Urechava. Is it the land of the jumbo burger, of the deluxe fish and chips? Or is it the land of closeness to God, the land of civilization and refinement, the land of morals and ethics, the land of objective values? What scale are you using to assess? Where is it Tov? Is it Tov Lanu B'Mitzrayim? Or is Eretz Yisrael the Eretz Chemda Tova Urechava? Which is the good land? Well, if you measure it based on hedonism, Egypt is probably better. If you measure it based on spirituality, then Eretz Yisrael is probably better. So now I think we have a little bit more insight into why Chazal tell us that the sin of the Jews here was not simply a complaint over their diet, but that it really was a rejection of the entire value system that they had been studying for the last year. Since they received the Torah at Mount Sinai, they were studying how to become more refined, more spiritual people. And now Egypt was better. Why was it better? Not because it was more spiritual, not because it was more refined, but because they had the most delicious fish and chips there. The onion and the garlic were out of this world. That's why Egypt was better. They were crying about the mitzvot. Elsewhere we learn that only 20% of the Jews left Egypt, because the Jews as Jews had no destiny in Egypt. They had no future there, because the future of the Jews is not to sit back on an easy chair and recline and watch TV or read the paper and munch on a jumbo burger or on a deluxe fish and chips. That's not a destiny. That's not a future. The Jews who emerged from Egypt, the Jews who deserved to be redeemed from slavery, were the ones who had spiritual strivings, ambitions, whose souls were touched by the thoughts, the lofty thoughts of refinement, whose souls were awake and were seeking to grow closer to God. And it was these people whom God anticipated would form the nucleus of a nation that would usher in the messianic age to mankind. But suddenly, some, perhaps many, of these people slipped. Hedonism, taiva, hisavu ta'ava, desire for pleasure, became contagious. They caught it. There were people with them who were less refined than they were. And suddenly, the bug of desire latched onto them. And perhaps some of them fought, conscious, subconscious, we don't know. There was a big mixture. Some of the converts were very, very good, sincerely motivated. Some of them, we know, were placed there as spies and provocateurs by Paro. Some of them were more sincere, others were less. The Jews also, there were different groups. This was opportunity, again, where God saw, I need Jews who will be nucleus of the most refined, the most civilized nation on earth. Of a nation whose values, who strives to achieve nothing less than being similar to God Himself. Selfless, altruistic, uplifted and uplifting others. Those who are capable of resisting this challenge, the temptation, of saying no to the onions and the garlic and the fish and the watermelon, those are the ones who deserve, who have a future. They're the ones who are capable of carrying the banner, right, of not just monotheism, but of all the values, all the refined values that Judaism represents, into the eschaton. But there were others who proved themselves incapable of this. 80% of the Jews in Egypt, they had no interest in leaving. And of the 20% who were interested in leaving, their commitment was so weak that they could cry and say, we don't get it. We spent a year studying Judaism and we're still measuring which is the good land. Is it Egypt or Israel? Well, let's see. Which one has better falafel? That's how we'll decide it. Once again, these people proved unworthy of becoming the nucleus of the chosen people. And once they're unworthy of that, there's no future. their past was not so glorious. Their future is not going to be so glorious. And if they're allowed to remain, so then that nucleus of people will be diluted. And so God almost had no choice but to take them away. For you and I, we're not a nucleus. We're already at the periphery. There have been thousands of years of Jewish history between the time of the desert and Matan Torah and nowadays. There are millions or tens of millions of Jews. We're not a nucleus. We're not so important that our presence or absence, if we're good, then good. If we're not, there are others. But that nation of 600,000 who stood at the foot of Har Sinai, it needed to be a totally pure nation. So was the punishment disproportionate? If we understood that the problem was, I wanted some meat, some fish, then there's room for our question. But if the complaint was really about, my values in spite of a year of studying Torah, all I care about is still what tastes the best. I reject the entire value system, which values spirituality over pleasure. That's a little bit more serious, especially if it's done consciously. And in the context of a people for whom absolute perfection is a basic necessity, a nucleus of perfect people. So then the difficulty, the danger, the problem is magnified a millionfold. Vayikra et shem ha-makom ahu kivrot ha-tava. They call the name of that place the graves of pleasure. Ki sham kavru et ha'am ha-mit-avim. That's where they buried the people who had an appetite for pleasure. That sums it up. This is the place where pleasure is buried. All those who march on from here are people who are committed to a different standard of values, who are committed to measuring good, not by how good it tastes, but by how close it brings one to God.